All right. Well, this has been a big week.
Mm-hmm. Why?
What?
Why? What happened? Something happened?
I don't know. I took the train today. Usually do that.
Listeners, this is the day, the release day for our currently longest episode to date.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to release this episode today. AJ's cat is losing his
holy
fucking
mind. We're also
in
my apartment because the lads decided to come over because they knew that I would be leaving tomorrow for a trip. So they wanted to make things easy on me and decided to come all the way out here.
Yeah, so...
it's actually much easier for me than going up to Brian's apartment.
Yeah,
so really, this is just inconvenience to Brian.
Yeah, I live far away from the other two guys, but I'm the one with the equipment, so they come to me.
Right.
Yeah. So I decided to acquiesce to these guys. I didn't know if we wanted to do a Lads Cast about this DLC. There's something, you know, because Outer Wilds is like, you spoil it the moment you start talking about it kind of thing. That's like, is the DLC even something that anyone's going to listen to? Well, we'll find out.
We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out. And we wanted to talk about it because it's really good.
You can just talk about things. You don't have to like talk about things in a way that makes you money.
That's true.
No, you have to make money.
Capitalism has infected my brain.
We have gotten comments. Yeah. We have had people say, "Oh, I can't. I would really like to hear you guys talk about the Echoes of the Eye." So we're going to talk about Echoes of the Eye, the DLC for the Outer Wilds.
Yeah, it really rules. You know, it's one of those things that it is ostensibly a horror game, which is surprising given the base game had elements of horror, I would say, but
the
nothing.
The
fish, like the big angler fish is very scary and does a loud screech when it comes and eats you or whatever. But it's not survival horror in quite the same way that this is. This feels like Amnesia: The Dark Descent got mixed in with my peanut butter and made a horrifying treat for all of us.
I'm just going to jump out there right now. Like, there were a couple moments that were kind of scary, but it's not horror. It's not scary.
Yeah,
really.
I was expecting more because the developers refer to it as like a horror thing.
Yeah.
But like, in the same way that like the base game has the fish, this also has its equivalent to the fish, but it's only just like a part of it.
Right.
Yeah, it's also like once you get caught for the first time and, you know, ostensibly, quote unquote, killed.
Yeah, and very decidedly not killed.
Yeah, unless there is one way you can get actual killed and it's very, very silly.
Sure, but they're not violent towards you. They
pick you
up and they blow out your candle.
Yeah. And so once you experience that as someone, you know, like me, who's very like tuned into jump scares or whatever, like once the first happens the first time, it's never really, I think, going to affect you too much again after that. So if you're a little bit scared to play it, they also have a setting at the top where you can just be like, less scares, please. And it makes the encounters less frequent.
So the way that this DLC worked was, what was this, 2021?
Yeah.
In the fall of 2021, they made an update for the Outer Wilds. The whole DLC actually sits inside of the base game. That cat's just not going to stop, is he?
No. Pippin really loves Outer Wilds.
I appreciate him. Can he go somewhere, or is he just going to kind of be around?
He's going to be around.
All right.
If he goes in somewhere, he's just going to scream.
Okay.
So.
Cool.
We live in his home. He does not live in ours.
Sure. This is going to be a problem. He's reaching into my camera bag, and there are wires in there.
Yeah, let's just take a moment.
All right. Pippin has been taken care of.
He's fine, everyone. He loves Brian now.
He's become Brian's son.
Yeah.
I have emotionally harmed him. He has very low self-esteem now because of me.
You dared to discipline the cat.
Yeah. Non-violently, it was just psychological, but
it'll last. Those are the ones that last. Those are the scars that really, really resonate. Yeah.
So,
like perhaps some echoes of an eye.
Yeah, the Echoes of the Eye actually just sits inside of the base game. If you buy the DLC, it just unlocks it.
Yeah.
And yeah, so instead of like other games where your DLC map is just like a separate thing on the menu, this exists in the same solar system as everything else.
Right.
There is a new little cabin thing that exists on the home world.
On Timberhearth, yeah.
And once you go there, you'll get like this radio signal that will lead you to a satellite. All of this stuff is new. All of this stuff got patched into the base game on its own where you don't need the DLC. And it's very confusing because then you'll go to the satellite and you'll get the signal and it doesn't lead to anything.
Yeah, I actually, right. The first time that I played, I had also bought the DLC.
Yeah.
And so I was like, ooh, what's that? And I went out to the satellite. I had no fucking idea what was going on.
And that's there even if you don't buy the DLC.
Oh, it is?
So it's just like, okay, this sure is here for some reason.
Right.
I definitely recommend playing through this whole game and then playing the DLC.
Yeah.
This is always the weird thing about DLC in general. Like, I remember playing Fallout New Vegas and then playing one of the sections. It's like, be level 15. I was like, level 17. I was like, cool, I'll play this one. And then it's like, this is really long and it takes you away from the rest of the game. Other games where you like unlock a weapon right at the beginning and you're like, there's that.
All right.
It's also one of those things where I played through the entirety of Echoes of the Eye without using any sort of strategy guide, except for at the very beginning, because I was like, what the fuck? Like, how am I supposed to do to like fucking get there?
Yeah.
And then I think I sort of, there's a couple clues in there in that room that show you what it is you need to do. But I needed to know to go to that room first. Once I figured that out, once I looked at the stuff on the wall, once I actually read what was going on, I was able to figure it out from there.
And what a fucking reveal of this thing, right? When you fly out into the depths of space and all of a sudden there's just a thing in front of the sun that looks like a giant eyeball.
That was an eclipse.
You fly straight into that shit.
Yeah, there's a giant like cloaked object that once you get in there, it sort of looks like, Deep Space Nine a little bit. It's got the big like hooks hanging out of it and a big... harbor,
a big port for your ship.
I think what I liked about it, the reveal, I mean, yes, first of all, the thing of like flying into this weird eclipse or whatever, being like, what's going to happen? But the way that it reveals and sort of the art direction around what it is that you are experiencing is so completely different from anything that you've seen before. That's very clear. This is not Nomai technology. This is not Parthian technology.
Yeah.
This is something completely different.
Yeah, oh, that's big, a really good point. And like metal. And you don't really see that anywhere else. Everything
it almost
else
feels
is,
like the Borg
yeah,
in a way.
Yeah.
There's a whole compilation on YouTube of people just accidentally running into the space station.
Right. If they bought the game with the DLC attached. Yeah. And which like, I don't recommend.
Yeah. Again, very, very silly. But yeah, you make your way into this port thing and then you have to use your flashlight, which is a thing that you've been using pretty much all game, but never to like work mechanically in quite this way, not to activate switches with light.
A lot of the mechanics, we talked about this in the main episode, is like you just look at stuff,
right?
You're not really, sometimes you're picking something up and putting it in place, but you're not really like pushing buttons or moving levers or spinning cylinders around or anything like that.
Right
here you are doing
that.
It's still basically giving you, at the very beginning, you just have the same tools you always have. You have your spacesuit, you have your whatever. So you have to shine your flashlight and that will get a door open.
And here's what I'll say about like all of these little bits and pieces, right?
Yeah.
This immediately scratched the like Cyan Worlds part of my brain.
Yeah.
It was like Mist Riven, all that. I was like, oh, here we fucking go. This honestly is kind of what I was missing from Outer Wilds, the core game experience.
Okay.
You do have, of course, the in the core game, you've got those switches that are operated with light, where you put your light on the little marble and you put it up or down or whatever.
Oh, yeah, but that doesn't require light. That's just your hand.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
The center of, and I never really liked those because they feel weird.
Yeah,
they get a little finicky.
It's just about you guiding the camera, and then the ball is supposed to sort of follow the camera, especially at the end, because that's key to the final moment of the game when you get on the shuttle and you have to input the coordinates.
Right,
yeah.
It doesn't feel great.
What I think is also very interesting is that the game, like as you said, Brian, most of the time it's you looking at stuff, but it's also you translating stuff using your translator. And I think there's something very cool. Once you enter into the space station itself, you walk up to a sign and try and translate it. And your translator goes, we have no idea what the fuck this is. And you don't translate anything in your time in there.
There's lots of language and you cannot interact with it at all. Thankfully, though, there are also pictures. Mm-hmm. There are slideshows.
So many slideshows.
And there are multiple ways that you can see the slides even before you figure out the correct way to light them. There's like other ways to sort of semi-light them. That's really interesting.
Cool.
But like the moment you step into this gigantic space thing, you are... The DLC can take about like, I don't know, like half the time that it takes to beat the main game.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I guess everyone's different, but like it's huge. It's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
And you are in an artificial gravity object. You are inside a sort of hollow, like in Halo or something, right? It's spinning around. Everyone lives on the outer rim of the inside of this thing.
Yeah. Or the space station from 2001.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, sure. And there's a giant river that runs down it, and there's a dam at the top of the river. And you can notice that the dam is leaking a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, I hope that holds.
Yeah. You get these rafts that you can pilot, again, using light. Everything has these Fresnel receivers, basically, and you shine your light into them. And then that moves switches around, that moves the boat around. You can see the sun through just like a giant window on one side of the device.
You see that like the space station itself has an artificial sun, and if you shoot your little like probe into it, you get an achievement that says fire arrow. So I'm like, oh, it's a Zelda puzzle. It's Majora's Mask. It's shooting into the sun to get the fire arrow. All right. So
why are you giving him that look, Brian?
It's been a long time since I played Majora's Mask.
Nah, it's okay. It's fun. It's okay.
Is it really a puzzle when all you get is an achievement?
I mean, what do you get in any other game? What
you know, it leads to more things in the game. Yeah. There's
your probe does explode and die forever.
There's such a concept as a school of design, right? Where your puzzle leads to a reward that then takes you to the next thing.
Right. Well, sometimes you reach the end of a quest line, you know?
What is the, it's an artificial sun? I thought it was that it was pointed at the sun of, where is
as
the artificial
the sun?
Sun?
I don't actually know.
So there's
know
one
what this
floating in the
is.
Center. So the window allows you to see outside, but if you're traveling in space and there's not a sun around for a while, they need something to just live in this station because they're trying to recreate,
their home planet.
Again, you are an archaeologist in this case. This civilization, is apparently long since abandoned, and you're sort of just picking through the detritus of what they left behind.
Yeah. It's a question of like, Who were they? The same thing that's kind of at the base game, but it's like, what's the chronology here? Did they get here before the Nomai? Did they get here after the Nomai?
Why are they here?
What are they doing? Well, I think it's pretty safe to say that there is
the
no future.
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
The distant future. Yeah,
sure. Turns out, spoilers, AJ, for The Outer Wilds, the universe ends.
It does, but a new one begins, so maybe they're from that one. That's possible.
I'm just covering my ass,
I fucked up. It's fine, baby.
But just like everything else, this is a changing environment. It is reacting to the end of the universe in the same way. Some sensor on it about, 10 minutes in?
Yeah.
Discovers that the sun is going to explode, and so it has these big solar sails that it lets out. The solar sails then cause some things to jostle that haven't been jostled in hundreds of thousands of years.
Right.
So
that's it for the dam at that point.
Yeah, the dam starts to break down your probe. They added a stealthy new feature onto the probe when they made the DLC that can detect stability of the object that it's sitting on. So you can shoot the probe at it and just watch as the percentage cranks down until the dam bursts. And then you have, again, this river is just going around in a complete circle. So you see the river sort of flooding all the way around in a circle with this giant wave that is going with it.
I'm just curious sort of to hear from you guys about like first impressions of the world, you know, from opening up that gate for the first time, experiencing this space, like, how did it feel for you guys?
It's Riven, baby. I'm just back in freaking Riven again.
It is.
It's like if Riven was set in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
And I do love the Pacific Northwest. So I was very excited to see where it was going to take me.
Did you anticipate where we would eventually go with all of the...
How? how could anyone?
Yeah, yeah, that's sort of...
Well, what did you think was going to happen?
I just thought that there was, you know, I think my brain had just been sort of Elden Ring designed, and I was just like, okay, so we're going to go around to all these different places, but there's going to be, like, a sub-world underneath it. Like, we're going to go into, like, another ring on the outside.
You were, or not that you wanted, you were expected more of, like, the structure of the space station being part of it.
Yeah, yeah, that we would go down to lower levels and things. But what they gave was so delightfully unexpected, because at first you're not 100% sure even what's going on. It's almost like you are doing magic for a lot of it, and then you eventually find out obviously there is a scientific explanation, because this is such a world of like physics or whatever, but it is a little bit more sci-fi based, I think, than I was than I ultimately ended up anticipating.
There's kind of just it's sort of like a classic science fiction short story that you find yourself
in
this one. There's like a clear through line, a clear sort of message to it. One that I think gets a little too much of a button put on it at the very end of the game. Once you've completed the DLC and replay the ending, it's like, I wish that dialogue wasn't quite so direct. But for a lot of this, it's like they just wanted to play with a totally different tone and a totally different type of experience while still keeping it in the mechanics of the original game.
Well, and I think that is enhanced by the visuals and the fact that almost all of the clues that you get in the core game are actually written out in some way, shape, or form, right? Like, actually you read them, whereas in Echoes of the Eye, it's purely visual. And I actually think that it works better as a way of sort of guiding you to what it is that you're supposed to do next, because I think one of the issues that I had with the core game was that it was sometimes hard to tell what was like flavor text, world building stuff versus intentional clues for things that you were supposed to do in the world. Whereas I felt that the usage of the slides helped with unifying those things better, where you got both of those things at the same time in a way that, at least for my brain, it was much clearer what I was supposed to be doing. And I had more of those aha moments where, like, there was one where I was like, okay, I don't know what to fucking do next. And I literally woke up the next morning and the first thought I had was, oh, I need to do that.
Yeah.
And that's
the
thing that you want in a puzzle game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting because I found them to be kind of equally effective ultimately, but it is because I think the little graph that you can have in the ship that's like, here's where to go next, or here's things that you need to explore next. I found myself using that less with the DLC than I did with the base game. And I think it was just because it was nice to have those pictures tell me what to do.
It's also nice to not have to travel so much. There's...
Sure.
I mean, it's still Outer Wilds, so you're always going to start in the same place, but it would have been even nicer, I think, to start just in the DLC every loop, but it's just not what the game is, and I appreciate that.
It'll take 2 minutes to get up there again, chart your course out to it, fly in.
It is pretty fast. Yeah. Like, all you have to do is mark the location again on your ship's computer, and you can just
floor it.
They've basically made it so you can't crash when you make your way into the landing pad. It'll just sort of correct itself when you get in there.
You can run into it and your ship can suffer massive damage if you don't slow down, obviously.
But like, if you're actually making it in,
you're not gonna die.
It goes pretty easy on you, and of course you're breaking it, but who cares, you're gonna spend the whole playthrough in the DLC,
right,
so you don't really need your ship.
And I think that's another thing that's worth noting too, right?
There's no ship controls that, basically.
You're not interacting with the ship at all once you get in, which I also found kind of refreshing. That I didn't like flying the ship around in the core game, but I just think that the movement mechanics on foot are more interesting.
And the way they play with them is less difficult, less fussy.
You're never really solving a puzzle, except I guess in Dark Brandon, when you are on the ship. On the ship, you're usually just trying to get somewhere,
right?
And you're usually just in space. And so here, it's like limited the time that you're just in space, and maximizing the time that you're doing stuff in the environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, there's actually some cool stuff that you can find on the outskirts of the vessel itself. Like, there is one hangar pad, but then there is also another secret entrance.
Well, and there's a pad on the other side of it,
which makes it faster to get
if you're on the sun side or the anti-sun side. But then there, a couple of secret openings. There's a secret opening in the hangar.
Right.
And then there's a secret opening somewhere else where they were testing out a certain device and it didn't go so well for them.
Yeah. It's so funny when I discovered the shortcut back to the main like hangar and I went, oh, why didn't I go and look over there? Well, it's right there.
It's just very dark and it doesn't look like there's anything behind those. It just looks like there's an outcropping of the wall rather than a pillar in front of the wall. It's really, really clever design once again.
And that is really, I think, the most distinct thing about Echoes of the Eye compared to the rest of this game is the usage of light and dark.
Yeah.
And the way that both in the overworld and what is, I guess, the underworld in a sense, it makes heavy play of what are the things that you can see when you have your light on? What are the things that require you to have the light off? You know, there are doors that are activated via lights in some situations.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll find yourself trapped in a certain area, or so it seems to be until you realize how to apply light to another thing, you know?
Although there are a couple places where you can just get trapped and the game just screws you for the rest of the loop and you have to do it again, which is very funny. I only got by it once. There are like three things that you have to get in these little rooms where it does a little Indiana Jones. You lift it off and the door closes.
Right.
And so after figuring it out the first time getting screwed, it never happened to me again.
Right.
And again, it's like they figured out the perfect loop length.
Yeah.
Like other time loop games have always been a little frustrating. I really didn't like Majora's Mask when I played it.
Sure.
I might like it more as an adult. I didn't like it back then because it's like, what do you want this loop to do? And playing and grafting the sort of main Zelda on top of it doesn't really work, right? Like the dungeons do not function in a time loop way. You just have to do all the lead up and do the dungeon and fight the boss the normal way and hope you don't run out of time.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's something to what I liked about Majora's Mask is that you had to like go into it wanting to accomplish a specific thing, and the time limit made you do that, and it made it.
Yeah, I love just having to do one thing in a video game and not like enjoying the world and not looking around.
Well, you
and
do
not
enjoy the
fun.
World, but you're just enjoying it in like pieces.
No,
right?
No. That's not what I like at all.
I love that because it feels immersive because you are doing the same. World over and over and over again.
It works for this game. That's different strokes for different folks. I prefer to have, as you know, a world where I can interact with it in the way that I want to interact with it. I don't like being forced into anything. Unless
Josh is like, go right and jump. What if I want to fucking start a small business and sell things to the Goombas?
That's what I'm saying.
I don't want to violate
That's what I'm fucking
saying.
Also,
all those bricks are made of people, and that's fucked up.
I think that's what the immersive sim genre really needs is like a trade component where you can set up like you can start up a business and
just. I mean, you could do that in Sleep No More. You just go into the candy shop and just start giving out candy.
I saw people doing that.
You can become a resident.
The idea of like an immersive sim, but they've just like put like the Apple II lemonade stand game on top of it. Like it's just very rudimentary. So you mentioned an underworld, Josh, and there's an interesting aspect of like there's this whole physical world that you're spending your time getting around. You find the secret doorways. You're finding these slide projectors that give you some story, but they're all like burned. Mm-hmm. A lot of things are burned. You have these sort of like, just like the Nomai had churches for the eye, you will find churches for the eye here as well.
But here they've been destroyed. Totally destroyed, like intentionally, clearly.
Yeah.
They have incinerators for the slide projection reels specifically. And I think there's a bunch of them, right? There's one you can find in the overworld and then they start like hiding them around, but it's like, it's almost like in every single district of the four districts that make up this entire big circle space station.
Yeah.
There is an incinerator like per one of those.
Yes. Well, and you also get the sense that in this world, watching these slide reels was a big part of community life in some way, shape or form because
there's always like, it's like a theater. There's always multiple seats set up. To watch the screen.
And if you go upstairs in these buildings, there are racks upon racks upon racks, which are mostly empty or entirely empty in some cases. But again, the idea here that you're getting from just the nature of the world itself is that you're starting to understand the way that these people lived, which again, I love it because it feels like Riven, which yeah, is
they live on a
great.
Cliffside.
Yeah. Right, right. And it's so funny, like the Riven misdirect in my brain was like, okay, so I'm going to have to learn this language
yeah,
so I can
yeah.
make out the
yeah.
signs and
yeah,
things.
Yeah, it's a fake out.
Yeah, but it's an absolutely a fake out because yeah. you don't.
And it also, when you are a Hearthian, you are living a peaceful existence mm-hmm. among a peaceful people. The Nomai are also peaceful. Mm-hmm. But here there's clear evidence of violence.
Yeah,
of interpersonal violence.
Yeah.
And you find these towers. There's a handful of little towers. Well, not little. They're big towers.
They're
That's
huge.
What makes them towers.
Yeah, but
like
but
the
they
idea
are
of
varying
a small
sizes.
Tower. Yeah.
They are varying sizes. And one of them is just in a cliffside face.
Yeah.
These seem
yeah,
to
one
be,
is really hidden, yeah.
Yeah, they seem to be like their churches of some respect.
And yeah, well or like I was thinking of like governmental buildings.
Oh, sure.
This must be like, you know, where, but they have these secret entrances and you go yeah. down the stairs and there's this green flame in the middle and they're surrounded by corpses.
Right.
They're all holding lanterns.
Elk, owl corpses.
Yeah. The fans call them owlks.
Owlks.
That's dumb. I'm sorry.
Oh, really? I kind of like
it. I think it's cute.
Okay. I'm alone in this because I'm a grumpy Gus.
Would it be
as opposed to
eels?
Me, I, Josh, am never a grumpy Gus, yeah. notably.
Eels would be the other
one. One of the characters that you encounter is listed in the documentation of the game as the file name of the character is Kepra.
Kepra.
Like Kepra Gebra from The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
Oh my god, that's right. Okay. When you go into
but yeah, they're part bird, but they have antlers and they're anthropomorphic.
Yeah, when you go into the place with the secret compartment, I don't know about y'all, but this was Myst. This was the library in Myst.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
100%.
Yeah, it's like octagonal the same way. Yep. Yeah
and there's something hidden behind one of the portraits,
which like, I just keep talking about Cyan, but like it is so clear that they took cues from Myst and Riven in building this world.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and they're very overt about the references in a way that makes me very happy. It's an homage,
right.
You know?
That's why it's funny to me that there are so many overt Legend of Zelda references, because I don't think that these puzzles really resemble Legend of Zelda puzzles.
Definitely
not at all.
There's just like
more of a Riven.
There's an underlying philosophy, I think, to the way that you interact with the world and the way that Nintendo designs a game that is speaking to them, but they are really not doing a Zelda thing at all here.
Except for the character design, I guess.
Oh, sure.
Which is
sure.
Zelda.
Oh,
yeah,
and
yeah.
The colors and the sort of natural world that you're interacting with. It's not as sterile as a Cyan world tends to be.
Sure.
But...
You go downstairs with this green flame and
then you don't know what the fuck to do.
No, you sit down, you can roast a marshmallow on it, which I think is very fun and silly.
You try to grab the other guy's flames, probably from the skeleton hands, and the game doesn't let you.
Yeah.
And at
the
place where you enter, there's a cabin. It's one of the only places that's been hit with
ghost matter.
Yeah, I was going to say phantom dust. I don't know where that came from.
Phantom menace.
Got Daniel Day-Lewis on the mind.
Yeah.
I like
Phantom Thread. Okay,
we went in totally different directions.
Yeah, I was like, my left foot.
Sing for me.
What?
That's the other Phantom.
My Angel of Music.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the other.
No
Phantom
Menace.
I said Phantom Menace.
But like.
I don't know. This feels like a Duel of Destiny.
I hate all of this. So in this little
and
cabin.
And the best part, you can't edit it out.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can, but I won't. So the ghost matter is in this cabin.
Yeah.
And there is a lantern, but it's not on. It doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
So you go down to that area and you're like, well, how do I light it? And you don't. Right. You have to do a thing that you only do in the main game if you're trying to pass time.
Right.
Right.
You sit at the fire. You just sit there with the lantern and then everything will change.
Yeah. And what's so interesting about it is that like I figured out a lot of the stuff like accidentally, and then I would later find a slide like in a place I hadn't explored in like the overworld yet that explained exactly what to do.
So you fell asleep with the thing in hand and you just ended up waking up on the other side?
Yeah, because I walked in and I saw everybody else. They were all holding that thing. Sure. And so I was like, okay, so it involves something with me bringing that thing into this room.
Right.
And I sat at the fire. I'm like, I tried to roast the marshmallow and that didn't work. And then, you know, I spent an entire cycle just sitting there seeing if maybe something would happen, if it ended, maybe the loop was broken.
Even
briefly.
Finding the way down, you're likely to just sort of do it accidentally because you're picking up an object and then the picture moves out of the way to let you go down.
Oh,
like that totally happened to me by accident.
I needed the slides for both of those things.
And then the other thing that happened to me, and I won't go into the details just yet, I found the alternate way to use the fire. And so that for a long time was the only way I knew how to get into the alternate world, which is a little weird because it's supposed to be something you discover
because then you can't
later.
Leave.
I had also looked up guides because I was we were supposed to do this back in March and I was playing through the main game and then I got it done in time that I started playing the DLC and I was like, oh, I'll get this done before Sunday when we record. And then we recorded something else. So I was looking up guides for some of this. Okay. So I can't say, oh, I'm clever me. I discovered things. I discovered the main way of resting at the fire from something online.
Okay.
Sure. Cause I was just trying to get through it.
But I mean, what a hardcore metal way to enter the world every single time. That's so cool.
But also kind of annoying because it takes a little while.
It does take a little while. So yeah, you enter into this other world, which is like, it feels kind of like a spirit realm.
You
right?
look around you and where previously there were all those skeletons, now those slots are all empty.
It's all empty.
It's like, oh, where are these? Where are the guys?
And this being a whole, that's, you know, they've designed it, I think, despite, you know, the varying degrees of how scary we find it, like they've designed it like a horror game, right? Their vibes on the top level feel a little bit eerie
it's
and
nighttime
sinister.
It's nighttime now.
It is nighttime
now.
It's
not
now.
A total recreation of the world that you were just in. It's different.
Yeah.
But there are sort distinct of, similarities. As
definitely.
If
the cliffs are at cliffs. Yeah. The lodge has a lodge. But it's a differently shaped lodge, you know, it's stuff like that.
So you're getting the sense just from looking around that like, okay, this rim world, which they clearly built and you can see that, you can see the fact that they built it from some of the slides. This was inspired by this other place, which seems to be the home planet. So are we teleporting through space? Are we accessing some sort of an archive, some sort of a memory?
Yeah.
They've also depowered you. They have taken away your jetpack.
Right.
They have limited your mobility.
Yeah, you're in. It felt to me pretty quickly like it was a simulation or an afterlife of some kind.
Oh, interesting. Okay, you immediately
spoiling
went,
a little bit.
You immediately went there. That's so cool.
Yeah, because I did certain things.
Of course, because
right. When you have this lantern too, you have two controls, two button controls.
Sure.
You can close the flame and completely kill all the light, or you can focus it, which lessens the light all around you, but it allows it to go a little bit further.
It lights up the
and
family.
It's like, what exactly can I do with all of this? And there are these stations that you can interact with, these sort of posts that exist, where if you focus on them, or you can press X to like blow out all the candles in front of you, everything is just lit by candlelight, because again, it's nighttime. You can see the sort of the planet that whatever moon this is simulating was orbiting around.
But yeah, of course, which kind of looks like Saturn.
There's a certain surreality to it as well, where it's like, well, I can blow through this hole here and it will immediately extinguish all of the candles that are in my line of sight.
Yeah.
Like what?
And you can focus the light and it'll make a bunch of candles come on. And sometimes that makes certain things appear and disappear.
Right. There is a raft system here as well.
Yeah, they've also got a raft, but it's
it only
like,
goes one way. It seems to be
on a Disney
track.
Ride.
It is a Disney ride. It does.
The Caribbean.
It does feel like pirates.
It goes two ways, but it doesn't move freely.
It just
stays on a rail.
I'm curious to hear from you guys here about like, you know, this other world, the underworld.
Yeah.
What did you guys find yourselves most immediately drawn toward? Because for me, it was the big house that kind of felt like the bathhouse from Spirited Away little bit.
Yeah. Well, because that's usually the first place you'll enter, I think, into the world is this sort of giant bathhouse center. I mean, Well, actually, no, because there's like the big sprawling lodge, and then there's like the one on the cliffs as well.
I'm talking about the big sprawling lodge because there's yes. the you have to turn on the bridge, and that yeah. moment really reminded me of Spirited
yeah.
Away.
And that yeah. tends to be like the place where you're going. I think it's where you might discover the slide projector that tells you the mechanic because it does seem to be kind of the first place that you're really exploring. It's yeah. also one of the more stable places in the overworld because it mm-hmm. doesn't get flooded out.
Right. And that is the thing that will happen is that sometimes if you are in the wrong tower, when the dam breaks, the world around you will flip
right.
and you will wake up outside of yeah.
or you just won't be able to access it in the first place because it's already right. been flooded.
But this is again a nice little bit of immersive in-world storytelling that's also giving you a clue about what's happening here mechanically.
Yeah.
These yeah. flames that exist in the overworld are the link between yeah. the overworld and the underworld.
And they're literally flames. They have exactly. to stay lit.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's so clever. Just like their design philosophy going into this is like they just wanted environments that constantly changed over time.
Yeah.
And I thought after I'd seen everything in Outer Wilds, they had sort of gone through every one of their ideas. And lo and behold, they have this really cool flooding mechanic with yeah. this dam that is vaguely, I guess, reminiscent of the Twin Ashes of like, you know, sand filling up one yeah. thing and losing yeah. access to things. But it is different and it is clever and it's exciting and it makes
really
you have to rethink
about
the world.
What water does. Yes. What? Why does it matter that it's water versus sand?
I don't think I've ever seen anything like it in any other game.
No,
have you?
No,
I really have. Not
that's
really
what, that's
like
what really blew my mind was like, yeah. this is something that is genuinely brand new to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I play quite a few games. Like,
no, that's true. That's true.
And yeah, a lot of it seems Echoes of the Eye is about like just sort of blowing up everything that they figured out internally. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, here are a bunch of other things that you could do.
Right.
But we can't do that because of the way that we've designed this game.
And then it's like, well, why can't we though?
Yeah. And it's like, okay, DLC, throw it over to the DLC.
And it is so funny that like usually for DLC, right, I would imagine that the impulse like actually going behind designing a game is like things that you couldn't quite get finished before the ship date, you would want to use in the DLC to implement them in some way and have the time to do it.
And it certainly does happen, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but in this case, like they spent so much time in the development of Outer Wilds, like just putting extra things in the ship. Mm-hmm. Like making the ship really complicated, and then they do none of that in the DLC.
Yeah.
Like they pretty much, like you said, Brian, they took everything they learned and then they threw out pretty much everything and built up from the ground up.
Yeah. So when you're wandering around this world, you can find, oh, there are living samples of these creatures. Mm-hmm. And one of your first encounters will probably be in the lodge, and it's just a shadow.
Mm-hmm.
Someone is watching.
He's just watching his movies. Yeah. It's no big deal. He's just chilling.
He's just having his story.
That's just what they do. And this is part of my thought of it like being like an afterlife, mm-hmm. which it sort of is.
Yeah.
And then if you shine your light on the shadow, you get a nice little, which is fun.
It's just them in this artificial world that they've created, looking back at their memories of the real world that they used to inhabit.
Right. Because they can't wake up. Because their bodies have long since died.
They're just actually dead, which is a little secret for what you can do later. Right.
So this is, in fact,
we call it the Brian Alford way of getting into the world.
Yeah, I just do everything wrong. This is why I'm bad at video games. This is why I can't play like Bethesda games, because I do one thing slightly out of order
and then the rest of the mission doesn't work. I would argue that you did it right. You figured out one of the big secrets.
So no, I didn't. So,
well, you figured out one of the big three secrets that you have to learn in order to beat this thing.
Sure.
I would genuinely argue that like it is cool to me that there is no wrong way to play this game. Genuinely.
Sure.
Like you can say, yeah, I did it the wrong way. And it does, doing it that way does lock you out of certain opportunities that are not to the design of the game.
Yeah.
Right. But they did nevertheless engineer it in such a way where even if for some reason you never found the mm-hmm. the like expected
the
way of getting
information,
in, you could still win. Like, you can still complete the thing.
This is probably the fastest you could beat a thing in the Outer Wilds. Like even the main canonical ending takes about a one whole cycle. You can probably get through this in maybe 6 or 7 minutes if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, you can watch the speed runs online. Yeah. So, because you don't have to wait for anything necessarily.
Right.
You have to actually wait in the main loop of the main game to do the final mission. But
yeah.
Then once you learn how to blow candles out, that lodge becomes one of the most difficult parts of this game. And I straight up just could not do this. I couldn't do the stealth.
Yeah, I also struggled with the stealth, and I did. I will fully admit I looked up how to get around it because
you can get around every single one of these interactions.
Blew up the entire idea of how do you interact with everything, right. And you basically have to hack the game, but in universe,
mm-hmm. right.
So, Josh, how were you with these stealth sections?
I actually gave the controller to Anne, who got through them for me.
Okay.
Oh, hell yeah.
And I like, here's what I'll say too. When it comes to stealth, I like stealth. I like stealth games.
Yeah.
I love, 2/3 of Alien Isolation.
Right.
Well, and you've talked about how Alien Isolation, the way that the stealth stuff there works is you really have to have headphones on.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never played that game with headphones, and I have already made it clear I have a bone to pick on the concept of first-person stealth.
Yeah.
Just like first-person platforming, Mirror's Edge.
They're doing specific things here, too, with the light. Because the way that your little torch thingy works is that, as we were saying, you can either keep sort of a broad wash on you, which is somewhat dim.
Yeah.
Right. Or you can focus it in a way that's very bright, but it makes the spot that you can see much, much smaller.
Yeah. Right.
And so it becomes very disorienting very quickly, and you kind of have a tendency to lose where you are in space.
Yeah.
Which sure. I didn't find that to be very fun.
In order to hide properly, you often just have to cover the light,
right.
But then you are in pitch blackness.
Right.
Yeah. You can't cheat by turning up the gamma. There's just straight up no information, and you're in first person. And that's just it.
And 2/3 of the time, the guy will find you anyway.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And there are ways, like, once you learn how to hack this afterlife thing,
it becomes a non-issue.
It does. It does. And it also, if you still want to do the stealth sections, you can actually hack this afterlife in order to see just the traffic patterns of everybody. Well, so then you know how to get
there's
around.
There's one I could do because it's just characters actually just moving in a straight line. And you can get close enough, cover up your flame, and then just follow them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But then once they go into the cabin, you actually just have to wait until they're all gone. And so the stealth isn't even something you're supposed to really interact with there once you figure it out.
I mean, the way I did it was
the cabin, they'll just see you anyway. You just have to wait for that area to flood.
And that's exactly what I did was rather than engaging with following the guy at all, I just waited for it to flood. I took the boat over just walked. I knew where the thing was. So I just went and did it myself.
Just watched them turn into
which is another viable
flames.
Strat.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things like it much like the secret entrance in the hangar, you know, the way to get over to that cabin is a little bit obscure.
Yeah, you kind of have to.
You do have to follow them
the first time and then fail and then figure it out.
Yeah.
But like, that was my one time where I was like, oh, I succeeded at the stealth. Oh, okay. And the when you get to like the actual stealth portions, it was just not at all legible to me.
I couldn't figure it out. I had a really hard time figuring out like how to lure them. People were talking about luring them.
Like what you can do is if you're in line of sight, you can... And if you're, especially if you're in a corridor.
Every time I lured them, they always just like turned and still found me no matter where I went.
The trick is to get them in a corridor and then shine your light down the corridor so that they go down it and then go around the other corridor.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, you can kite them around in that way. But again, as a stealth game, it's not especially satisfying.
Yeah.
The stealth mechanics are not especially satisfying.
They patched the shit out of this.
Okay.
This used to be a lot more complicated.
Yeah.
They actually changed the level design. And another thing that changes when you blow the candles out is there are the whole reason why the owls are now out in the courtyard and everything is because certain doors that were closed have now opened.
Right.
So the shape of the space is also different. So you can't scout it beforehand.
Right. Oh.
It becomes sort of a new place. And it was even more complex before. And they had to simplify
people must
it
have
a couple
just kept
months
on getting
later.
Lost, right?
Yeah. Like, it was just like, it was so, so hard to navigate. And it's still incredibly hard to navigate. But thankfully, you have to, this would be hard to figure out accidentally because it doesn't give you the on-screen indicator that you can put your lantern down easily.
Yes.
You have to basically point the camera straight down before it'll tell you.
So that's you can place it down anywhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anywhere you want.
Anywhere. No, that's the fun part.
Wait,
right?
Josh, did you think you had to place it down in very specific
there
spots?
There were only a couple places where...
Yeah, if you're just pointing straight down, yeah.
You set it down and you walk out of its radius.
No, yeah, I know. Yeah, I figured out how to do that, but for some reason, okay.
You just thought it was in very set points.
There were specific places where I noticed that I could do it, and I was like, okay, I guess
interesting.
This is the places where
you
can do
it. Like, oh, yeah, yeah, no, it's like, it's different from like if you're carrying scrolls or whatever in the main game where
right.
If you're pointed down, I don't know, like 15 degrees or something, right. it'll give you the thing. But
I guess just to use an example, right, there's the part where sort of the big puzzle at the end.
Yeah.
And in order to see part of the solution to that big puzzle, you need to set your lantern down mm-hmm. and you need to walk a sufficient distance to see the core, to see the matrix, right?
Yeah. So explaining this further, the lantern is the way that the whole simulation gets processed.
Right.
So the further you step away from the lantern, the more you just see the world for what it is, which is the matrix. So it has a little like orb of influence. And if you walk, I don't know, 10 feet away, then you'll find yourself in a world where you just see wireframes,
right.
And even the simulations of the other people that are in the holodeck with you just appear as like the little icons from Prison Architect.
Yeah. And what
I see, and I never got a chance to see that because the only place that I thought I could actually do it was at that puzzle spot at the end. And
oh
there
yeah.
Aren't
you can,
any guys
you can
there.
Do it everywhere. Huh.
Yeah. 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 And that's again, the way that I learned the traffic
sure.
patterns of all
right.
the guys. Cause you know, it's pretty easy that way. But also I think this leads to sort of the broader thing that the DLC is actually about, I think, which mm-hmm. is overcoming fear, right?
You are in the story. Yeah.
In the story. And also as a player, you are put into a very scary situation where you are clinging to your light. And the only way to actually solve it is to put down your only source of safety and walk into the darkness about 15 feet. And then everything is illuminated. The main protagonist of this DLC, who you don't meet until the very, very end, turns out he was the only one. He was the one trying to get his people to overcome their fear of the unknown.
Yeah. There's one thread in the sort of overworld part of Echoes of the Eye that doesn't go anywhere. It's one of the few moments where it's like there's no action and no puzzle linked to this. You're just supposed to take in this information. It was very frustrating because I was like, okay, so I'm supposed to find this thing.
Right.
That you find a room that is like a control room for a probe.
Right.
And that probe does not exist anywhere in this game. It's not like even the probe that gets shot out of the cannon at the beginning of every loop, you can find it. It doesn't do anything, but you can find it. This probe cannot be found. It does not matter. Everything's broken in that room for some reason. But this probe is related to the eye.
Right.
Some of the things that you found is like, just like the Nomai, they found the eye of the universe there. They decided to follow it. And then, of course, something has happened regarding that.
Yeah.
And this prisoner is someone who seems to be still, venerating the eye, whereas the rest of his people have turned on it.
Well, because they are seeing the eye and they've seen what the eye is capable of doing.
Yeah.
And we, of course, we being players have seen what the eye is capable of doing.
Yeah.
If we've played the core game.
Right.
And so they're like, this thing is dangerous and nobody should be able to access it. And so they basically put a cloaking device using that probe in front of the eye, which blocks out its signal.
Yeah, there's this disruptor. So they know where it is. They can find it very easily.
Yeah.
And as you remember, the Nomai couldn't find it. They got a signal. They came to the solar system. The signal
disappeared. They got as far as the quantum moon.
And then we, of course, find out in a fun little bit of storytelling later that the whole reason that the signal disappeared was that these guys, the owl guys, they blocked it.
Yeah, because they looked into the eye and what they saw was that there would eventually be a point that someone would go into the eye and then end the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so they were like, shut it down, shut it all the fuck down. We're burning all of our shit so that no one ever goes.
Yeah, they don't understand that what the eye is giving them is just simply what will happen.
Right.
It's just the universe will end and life will begin anew and there's nothing you can do about it. It has nothing to do with you, really.
Right.
But they see it as something very, very dangerous.
And I think that's an interesting thing maybe to mention just briefly is, the point of this is something that is so much bigger than you as a player, yeah. than the world of the game itself.
Oh, absolutely.
This is something that, as you said, it's just going to happen.
Yeah.
And so you can make peace with your lack of control, or you can try to exert control over something that you cannot have true control over. I found that to be a really... This was the piece that I think when I was saying, I don't know if I said this to you, AJ, or you, Brian, that this for me filled in a piece of the ending that I was really missing the first time I played this game.
Okay.
The question of agency and the fact that I found it a little bit, as we'll recall, nihilistic the first time around, because it's like, okay, we all fucking die. So what? You know?
Yeah.
Whereas here it was like, I really better got the sense of, things are going to happen whether you want them to or not. Some things right. will always be beyond your control.
Yeah.
And to try to control that which you cannot control is an inherently fruitless endeavor. But what you can do is make as much happen during those times that you have possible, and also encourage others to make discoveries and do things and stuff like that.
Yeah, because you don't know what effect you're going to have.
Right.
What you know, development that you make will then, you know, hundreds of thousands of years of now from now lead to something better and something great. And there's a whole illustration we get to at the end, I think, that really captures that beautifully.
So these sections, these stealth sections, once you get to the end of them, you always find yourself in an elevator, you go down to this lower level, and then you find like intact slide projection.
Yes, the archives. There's three archives.
And so these are things that you have seen before, but they've been partially damaged. But there, there's also like one that you haven't seen before that's all about the way the simulation works and how to break it and how to put the lantern down and walk away from it. But like, for instance, it recontextualizes the story of everyone building the giant ship, the Stranger, as it's called, and bringing it into the solar system.
Right.
You get the missing part of that reel, which is that they destroyed their entire home world in order to build it.
Right. In order to seek the eye.
Yeah.
And what I think is very cool about all this is that as you're exploring all of these archives, first of all, they're all very different in like design, which I thought was very fun. There's one that's sort of like a spa. Like it's got like little like ponds and things around there. Like it's very clear that like what I love so much about this game is that it considers not only what civilizations do to like advance their science or whatever, but also just how they relax. Like you see like how they would actually live their lives.
Yeah.
And while you're doing that, you also find a giant sarcophagus that is locked by three different padlocks.
Yeah.
And whatever's inside's gotta be real and scary.
This is another bit of very clever design from the developers, because you're like, well, how am I gonna unlock these locks? And you don't. Right. You bypass the whole thing.
Yep.
Surely I'll have to get the three secret codes.
Yeah.
Nope.
There's a tower at one point that has these symbols, and you figure out what those symbols are, and you can get a door open, and so you get another one of those down in the simulation, but you will never find out where the symbols are, because that's not how you solve the puzzle. The puzzle by breaking everything open.
And again, like the actual like panels that hold these combinations, they have been completely destroyed.
Yeah.
The game does a really fun bit of misdirection
here. That's right. All three basements have these things that you've been looking for. You've seen images of everyone taking the objects, the three objects, the three puzzle keys.
And you've played, and if you're playing this game, you've played video games before. So it's like,
I know what that's going to be.
Oh, I got to get the three key items. And then I find the codes, and then that, and then you find the first one. It's like, hey, wait a minute, this one's been burned out.
Yeah.
You find the second one. Hey, wait a minute, this one's been burned out. You find the third one, and you're like, wait, hold on.
Fuck?
Yeah. What's going on?
And then you're like, oh, obviously, I need to put the lantern down.
Right.
And then I'll step outside into the Matrix and I'll look at them, and they're destroyed there too. It's like, you thought, motherfucker.
And I love it, because the developers are like, these races are very smart. Like, you know, like this ancient civilization wanted to destroy this.
Yeah.
So they didn't just destroy it and then make it easy for like one person to come along and fix it.
Uh-huh.
Like, and actually, in order to progress the game, you have to beat them at their own game.
Right.
You have to break their world wide open.
You have to figure out that the area between the different zones in the simulation is waiting to load the next zone.
Right.
This game does not have loading screens mid-game, except for these sections where everything goes dark for
a
minute.
And I was like, huh, I wonder why the engine is like reticulating splines right now. No, it's faking it.
Right.
It's like they got you.
Oh, they got me so good. I can't believe they fucking got
it's
me.
So yeah, that's so good.
Learning that, I was like, even after learning the information, as I was going through the tunnel, I'm like, this isn't gonna work. I'm gonna fucking die. Because again, leap of faith,
yeah.
Right? You're
that's
terrified
a scary
to jump.
Thing to do.
You jump, yep. You fall, it's like, oh, I'm gonna die, and you hit the ground, you're fine.
Yep.
It's all fine. And then you've cracked the world open. And the last big thing is that, yeah, you don't just rest at the fire. There are things that can wake you up. If you set off the mm-hmm. alarms, they
wake
won't kill you. They'll wake you up.
Yep.
So what do you do to keep them from doing that? Well, you make it so it's impossible to wake up.
Yeah.
By dying in right. the fire. So yep. This is how I first figured out how to go to the simulation. But this is usually something that people learn late in the game. Like, oh yeah, everyone around me is a corpse. If I become a corpse, I can still be in the simulated right. world. It's still Outer Wilds. There's still the Ash Twin Project. The sun's going to explode. I'm going to come back to life.
Right.
It doesn't really matter. So all I have to do is just die.
Right.
And then the alarm won't work and I'll just walk straight through.
Yep.
So then you encounter the prisoner. The guy named Kepra in the game files. Little internal reference.
Yeah.
And the prisoner, at this point, you kind of have learned everything about him, right? He's the one who was on, who believed that the eye was good, who was against the sending out of the probe to jam it.
He was the only one who was willing to stand up against Woke.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. And they threw him in jail for it?
He was a brave, heterodox thinker.
They jailed him. For Woke.
That's, and he's just multiple levels below everything. And everything takes so much time here. And here they've implemented, especially in Echoes of the Eye, they implement little cheats here and there to set the clock back a little bit. But you have to take this big like elevator all the way down. You have to figure out how to die. You have to figure out how to get under this diving bell. It's all of these different mechanics.
Right.
And once you get to him, it's like that moment where you meet Solanum,
yeah,
where she can't talk to you. You can't tell her anything.
Right.
She has questions. She can't ask them, but she can answer you because you know how to read her writing.
Right. But now you don't know how to read his writing.
You don't know how to read his writing. You can't speak the same language. He also appears out of nowhere. It's a nice little jump scare moment.
It's a semi jump scare.
He's scared of you. You're scared of him. And then it's fine.
Here's what I want to say about the design of these guys, though. Yeah. They're kind of cute.
Yeah, no, they're cool. Yeah.
They're scary. But what's so funny is that they can be so scary and then they get very cute when they want to be cute.
Their portraits are always creepy because they kind of glow a little bit.
Yeah.
And you get the opportunity, and this is another reason why you want to do this basically after you've beaten the game. You get the opportunity now to impart what you have learned.
Yeah.
Right.
To him through that same imagistic method of the slideshow. You are feeding a slideshow to the prisoner.
And so, just as he does to you. Like he shoots into your
brain
as well.
My story, here are the slides of what has happened to me. And this changes completely based on how much game you've played.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. If you are missing information, it's not going to end up in your slideshow.
Right.
But this is the one time in the game where it decides to just sort of crystallize all of the information you have. And if you've beaten the game, if you've played through everything, you will get everything from the Nomai getting the signal, which then connects back to his story, to landing in the Dark Bramble, to launching the escape pods out, to building their society, to everything, to the comet unleashing the ghost matter, them dying out, and then the birth of your own species as sentient beings.
Yeah.
And it's incredible.
It's so
breathtaking because the design changes based on which race they're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when he beams into your head, it's all the sort of pictorial things that you've seen up until that point, the same sort of style.
Yeah.
It's like gothic art kind of style. And then when it does
you have a totally different style.
The Timber Hearth style, it's just more folksy. Like it feels like a little bit more hand-drawn. And it's just like, here's our basic understanding of the universe. And you see the prisoner.
You get
realize
to see
he's right. They're right. You know,
you get to see your guy as a little baby and then growing up and being like, I'm
going to
go out on my own. It's
going to space. And it's like the prisoner was proved ultimately right. Because what did
there was nothing to fear. Yeah.
Yeah. What did escaping into this world, this virtual reality world, do to any of those owl elves, those elks, really, but have them just stare at a slideshow for all eternity past.
All they can do is watch TV for the rest of their lives.
All they do is just regret everything, right?
Yeah.
Like, even their life was like, well, we want to build this simulation so we can go back to the home that we destroyed for all of this. Everything is always like living in a reality other than the one that you're in.
You just get trapped. They get trapped in the past.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're trapped in the past forever.
Yeah.
Because once that's the thing, right? Like, yes, eventually, because of the events that are happening in the game, the rim world collapses and all of the flames are extinguished or, you know, destroyed when that sun goes supernova. But they can't, short of throwing themselves into, you know, the water or whatever.
Yeah.
They have no way of, they can't die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nor would they want to, because this is what they thought they wanted. Right.
Right.
You know, and it's so telling that the prisoner then is able to leave.
Yeah.
And I don't think we ever find out what happened to them.
He jumped into the water.
He walks into the water. It doesn't say it outright,
but yeah, it looks like he just walks into the water and lets his fire go out. Yeah,
that is it for him because
until you see him at the Eye of the Universe when you play the ending a second time.
Right. Yeah, so you go through again. You reawaken on Timberhearth. You do the whole Ash Twin Project thing. You fly through Dark Brandon. And you find yourself going to the eye. You throw yourself into the eye. Whole ending plays out
playing the instruments. Yep. But now you also have the prisoner there.
Yeah.
And the way to bring him to the campfire is so cool. You go to a tree like the ones that you saw while on the space station, but you hear a knocking from underground because there's a grave and you have to go into his grave and look around and you have to extinguish all the candles around you.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of a jump scare while you're down there, but then it's fine. It's over because you turn around and he's there and then he's gone.
And in this world, of course, or in this moment in the game, you can talk to everyone. You can even talk to Solanum.
Yeah.
And so you can talk to the prisoner, and the prisoner's lines, again, I just think are a little too pat. Is a little too like, yes, my people were all afraid, but now we, and it's like, I got that.
Right.
I want to hear the prisoner say something. I want to just get something.
I want to hear about you.
Yeah. Of who this is, because we don't get to do that. And instead it was like a little like synopsis of what we just had in the DLC.
Right, but it's cool because he also adds a new instrument to it. It's like a cello. It's a cello. That's right. I thought it was like a bagpipe kind of situation. But it's very lovely. It rounds out sort of the whole ensemble. And then you get a little extra bonus a couple billion years later.
So I told you about like the ending. It looks different based on whether you went to the quantum moon or not.
Right.
Right. You either just see a campfire or you see the campfire with the little mantises around it.
Yeah.
And after you've played the DLC, there's another change that happens to that ending card where you see another species also coexisting
with a fucking spaceship.
Yeah.
With like a giant, like very scientific looking spaceship. And it's like, oh, okay. The idea is that the more, cause you have the option of not including him in the ending, right? He doesn't have to join the song if you don't want to, but if you bring the prisoner into the orchestra, it just makes the future generations all the more rich because they've also learned from them.
Yeah. Not only what I loved is, not only do you have the guys around the fire, and then on the other side, the left side, there's like the guys who have like their spaceship or whatever. Then in the middle, you've got a guy with a lantern walking through the forest.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So
very fucking cool.
That's the Echoes of the Eye. It's very worth playing. Very weird. Very cool. Very Pacific Northwest. Everything about it is just very special. We didn't even go into the whole thing with the side rooms and the blown out space and everything else, but it's got all of those hallmarks. And then it surprises you so many times in a game that you thought must have gotten through all of the tricks that it had.
Yeah. And it just expands on its our themes. You know, it's like, it's not a DLC that's just like, oh, here's a fun little add on horror bonus. It's like, it doubles down on everything that it stands for, that what you do now has ramifications beyond just who you are. Yeah. It will affect, you know, generations upon generations to come.
And it really,
explore the stars
enriches the game, like it enriches the storytelling and it for me, again, it made it emotionally resonant for me in a way that I didn't find it the first time around. So glad I had a chance to play it. Glad we had a chance to talk about it. And now it's probably time for us to read some names.
That's right.
Yeah, let's read some names.
Cool. So as we talked about on the last Lads Cast, it's become a bit much to read like over 100 names every time we fucking do this.
It's a great problem to have, as Brian said.
It is a great problem to have. And the way that we're doing this from here on out is that we will always be reading the names of our Legs patrons at the $20 tier, as well as anybody who has joined or upgraded in the past month to the Pangloss $10 tier. So why don't we get this started here? And I guess I'll go me, Brian, AJ.
Yeah, sure.
And let's get started with our esteemed Legs patrons. You have Legs. You give us $20 a month. We love you for it. You are fantastic. You are the wind beneath our wings. And your names are Joe at Anime Sickos Podcast.
Josiah Sutton has been kidnapped by the Shredder, thus fruitless by the foot.
I got Legs because AJ told me to do so in a dream.
And a Fen Berber in a bear tree.
Nope. And a Fen Berber in a bear tea.
Oh, bear tea.
Yeah.
Oh.
Also, yeah. Jack Drummond.
All right. Yeah, thank you, Legs. Great. Yeah. Now we move on to Pangloss.
Yes.
So these are our $10 patrons.
Yeah, these are some of you who have just joined at $10 or upgraded your membership to $10.
Woo-hoo.
We are appreciative of both of you.
Welcome, fellow
both
Panglossians.
Both of you categories.
Categories.
Yeah, there's
not,
more than
not
two.
Not all two of you. No. Yeah. Parker Anderson.
Gnee.
DM Kelsey.
Josh James.
Lucas White.
Jacob Morris.
Will Sundstrom.
Three memes in a trench coat.
Benjamin Dale.
Cassandra Banner.
Rachel Alday.
Kendrick Attaway.
Zap Razdowler.
Raven Owen.
Edward Cardell.
And Elizabeth Power.
Well, you'd think, but while we were recording this podcast, we got one more Legs patron.
Okay, we're not going to do that again.
And
we're not alive.
That's just... in a pear tree.